Oh, Kira, congratulations. Look at her tiny fingers. She's beautiful, just like her mommy.
Oh, thank you.
Have you got a name yet?
Well, we're thinking
she's going to call her Brooklyn. Brooklyn, Massachusetts, Phoenix, Arizona.
Your vote is your voice. So if you don't speak up, someone else is deciding for you.
Baltimore, Kentucky, Murphy O'Neill.
Who is that?
Hospital porter. Just back from his American road trip.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
Oh, Brookie Massachusetts, come to Auntie Hannah.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
So he goes back a better player from this experience, and he'll have a few extra quid in his pocket, so, and possibly a medal in his pocket. It's a great move for him. It's good for Leinster in some ways, but in other ways, and I think I'm more leaning this way, I don't like it for Leinster either. I think the homegrown talent that they have, I really feel like they might curtail some of these things.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's episode of the Indo Daily contains language some listeners may find offensive.
Today on the Indo Daily, from Hollywood bad boy to centre stage at the Oscars, the reinvention of Colin Farrell.
Here are the nominees for performance by an actor in a leading role. Colin Farrell in The Banshees of Inisherin.
It's been a week for Castleknock's Colin Farrell. But the road to the Academy Awards has been far from straightforward.
Well, I mean, it's been sex, drugs and rock and roll, 100%. And then there's been movies made in between all this. I mean, he has said that he was either high or drunk from the age of 14 for the following 17 years.
I came blazing onto the scene with a bit of moxie and a bit of Irish this and a bit of Irish that. And don't care about, you know, don't give a shit about it, you know. And this is not to apologise, I was a young man.
Farrell was once tabloid fodder for his sex tape, relationship with Britney Spears, and his quite frequent visits to rehab. But he seems to have left that all behind him.
The birth of my first son, James, was a moment in my life where I got to realise fully that I wasn't just living for myself anymore. I had this little baby who didn't need a best friend, who needed a dad, so that was a big turning point.
I mean, he's been on a journey, to use that terrible X Factor phrase. You know, he was as low as he can go, and now he's as high as he can go. He's clean, he's sober, he's just been nominated for an Oscar, he's won a Golden Globe.
Right, lads, we're off to the Oscars.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by the Irish Independent entertainment correspondent Melanie Finn and Sunday Independent film critic Chris Wasser to look at the reinvention of Colin Farrell. Melanie Finn, Colin Farrell's nomination for Best Actor, it's a massive achievement, isn't it?
I mean, it's absolutely huge. And it kind of comes at the right time in his career as well. I think everyone really related to his Golden Globe speech where he was so generous, thanking his co-star, thanking Martin McDonagh.
Martin McDonagh, I owe you so much, man. 14 years ago, you put me working with Brendan Gleeson, my dance partner, and you changed the trajectory of my life forever in ways that I begrudgingly will be grateful to you for the rest of my days. Brendan, I love you so much.
And, you know, this really is hard won success for him.
He has had a total reinvention, though, hasn't he? Because the Colin Farrell of old was the bad boy, there was drugs, there was drink, there was all sorts of problems. He often made the tabloids for all the wrong reasons. And over the years, he has some awards, but it's his cabinet isn't as extensive as you might expect someone of his, the number of films he's been in, I guess.
No, I mean, it's been sex, drugs and rock and roll, 100%. And then there's been movies made in between all this. I mean, he has said that he was either high or drunk from the age of 14 for the following 17 years. So that's a lot of excess, a lot of partying. And in the world of Hollywood, you can get sucked up very quickly into a very bad cycle. And this is exactly what happened to Colin Farrell. You know, he seemed intent on pursuing that idea of fame and fortune, thinking that that would make him happy. But in fact, he spiraled, and he spiraled very, very badly. So he made a few movies. He was being feted as the new Tom Cruise, essentially earning 10 million per movie. But inside, he was absolutely miserable. And he opened up in a famous interview with the Radio Times, where he talked about spiraling. And he said, I ended up on a shrink's couch, and he asked me to write down what I did in a week. 20 E's, 4 grams of coke, 6 of speed, 1/2 ounce of hash, 3 bottles of JD, 12 bottles of wine, 60 pints, 280 fags. He looked at me and said, no wonder you're depressed.
But sorry, let's go through that list again, Melanie. 20 E's, 4 grams of coke, 6 of speed, 1/2 ounce of ash, 3 bottles of Jack Daniels, 12 bottles of wine, 60 pints and 280 fags. Where would you get time to go to the toilet?
It's a lot. I'm like, that would take a lot of time to do that. You know,
and the
even
up
like
and the down.
I know. No wonder he felt terrible in himself. But I would say it got to the stage where he was so sedated that would barely skim the surface for him in terms of his alcohol and drug taking levels. You know, you can say he kind of won himself a reputation as a hard partying Irishman. He was charming. He was good looking. He was being feted by every Hollywood executive in town. And it was a disaster for him, because if you're that rich, that celebrated, that famous, nothing is off limits. And for someone like Colin Farrell, who has addiction issues, that's a very dangerous place to be.
Now, I know, Melanie, that you get to meet a lot of these celebs in your role as entertainment correspondent. You interviewed Colin Farrell. Well, we've both interviewed Colin Farrell, in fact, at various stages.
Get you, Kev.
Yeah. You interviewed Colin Farrell in Abracababra.
Glamorous.
Explain.
Surroundings of Abracababra. Yeah, I got a tip off that he was going to be there. He's actually an ambassador.
It's 3 in the morning after like 3 bottles of Jack Daniels.
Yeah, he was sober, thankfully, at this time. But so he's an ambassador for Abracababra. Basically, you get free Abracababra for life. How
this must have been a long
that?
Time ago,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, it was. It was about, I think, about 2008, 2009, roughly.
Yeah, I have a kebab shop that I go to.
Oh,
yeah.
Kebabs, huh?
Yeah, a place called Abracababra.
Do they get excited when you come in there?
I have a gold card. I was the first person to get the gold card. They did it for me.
Do you use it?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I haven't paid for a kebab in 5 years, man.
So I rocked in. It was the one in Donnybrook. I don't even know if it's still there, to be honest. And Colin Farrell, what can you say about Colin? Like, you instantly fall in love with him. He's charming. He's very handsome in the flesh. But also, he has that kind of charisma that draws people in, that makes you feel engaged, that makes you want to know more about him. He's very smart. He's very self-deprecating. He talks, like, really super fast. So, shorthand at the time, had to be pretty on point. And he's just a lovely guy. And he gives great quotes, which is why the media loves him so much. Unfortunately, he doesn't do that many interviews now, not as many as I would like. But he just makes for great TV.
He's very disarming, because I went to LA to interview him myself. And I have to say, I knew the stories about Britney and all the back, all those kind of things. And I thought I was going over to meet this bad boy. And you meet him in a nice hotel, and he is completely disarming. And because I knew I was doing this podcast today, I actually dug out the tape and listened back to a bit of it, that awful thing, listening to yourself on tape. But it's astonishing how I clearly went from a, hello, Mr. Farrell, I'm Kevin Doyle, to, and what's the crack with Jimmy Kimmel? And what's going on with this and the other? And you just find yourself, the two of us in a room, just chatting like two Irish lads. And you know, one who was just delighted to be in LA, and the other who obviously has millions and millions in the bank. And that he has found that again now. And I think that's probably part of his reinvention. You mentioned his Golden Globe speech, which he got a lot of credit for.
And lastly, Jenny the Donkey, who is, Jenny. And she's having an early retirement because she said, fuck this film business, you're welcome to it. And my kids at home who are watching this, James and Henry, the loves of my life. I love you so much. And thanks, Hollywood Foreign Press. All the best, Eddie.
And he's kind of been praised as almost in this world of toxic masculinity, particularly in Hollywood, that he's kind of charming and respectful of women and his co-stars and people who don't have it all in the way that he does.
100%. You know, I mean, he's kind of lived it all. He's only actually 46. I know it seems like he's been around for a million years, and he has appeared in over 50 movies to date. I think really it was hooking with directors like Yorgos Lanthimos, who is, of course, behind The Lobster and Killing of a Sacred Deer, where he was united with his co-star in Banshees, Barry Keoghan, and they both gave astonishing turns.
Now, have you thought of what animal you'd like to be if you end up alone?
Yes, a lobster.
Why a lobster?
Because lobsters live for over 100 years. Are blue-blooded, like aristocrats.
So he started to be more about the work than about the celebrity.
But take me back to the celebrity stage, because in many ways that's like, at one stage there was a magazine who ran its front page cover asking, have you slept with Colin Farrell yet?
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was his reputation.
Sure, there was those famous photographs of him hanging out with like Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan. And, you know, he was boasting about how he slept with every young starlet in Hollywood. I mean, he went to a really crazy place. Like it's easy to kind of forget now when you look at him and he's stone cold sober. And I think he has to be really commended for that. But he did say that Miami Vice was one of his worst movies ever. It actually made over 100 million. So it wasn't like a flop per se. But it was his ultimate descent. It was like his moment of clarity. He says now that he can't even remember a single frame from the movie. He went to the premiere and he's like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next. And the day after the rap party, he checked into rehab in 2006 and he realised, I'm going to die if I don't stop.
Well, at various stages, he's been described as a man of spectacular excess, a hooligan, a sexual maniac, and probably the most striking one, a budding obituary.
Speaking of sexual maniac, there was, of course, the famous sex tape as well. Way, way, way before we had like the ability to video on our phones, he made a sex tape with a Playboy model. And this kind of only cemented his reputation as Hollywood's bad boy. Like there was nothing he wouldn't do or be linked with.
Tell me about some of the women in his life. Not necessarily girlfriends. We know he had many of those. But the one that always stood out to me was Elizabeth Taylor.
Elizabeth Taylor, he struck up a really unusual relationship with.
So it came with a handwritten note from her. And I then cheekily, about a week later, I said, listen, is there any chance I could go and see her? I asked Danica and she made some calls and I got to have an audience with her. And that was the beginning of the last kind of romantic relationship I had, which was never consummated.
They had a platonic relationship right up until her death in 2013. He was 34, she was 75, and he said, I wanted to be homespun number 8, but we ran out of road. And they met in hospital. She was recovering from heart surgery. He was visiting his newborn son, and he said, I loved her and I still care for her.
Other names, alleged flings, Demi Moore, Carmen Electra. You mentioned Britney Spears, of course.
Mm-hmm. There was also his famous wedding, of course, to a British actress by the name of Amelia Warner. That everyone seems to have completely forgotten about. And they got married on a beach in Thailand. And he's always spoken very fondly of it. Again, who knows what his state of mind was, whether he was compos mentis when he decided to get down on bended knee and propose to this beautiful actress. But he's lived a life, I think that's fair to say, about Colin Farrell. And I think it makes him all the more interesting. I think it increases his range as an actor.
He has 2 children.
Yes. He has a 19-year-old and a 13-year-old. And of course, he's famously talked about his son having Angelman syndrome. And he says he's happy. He obviously has challenges to overcome. He's been getting brilliant therapies to bring him along. He's 19 years old now and he completely adores him. And of course, his other son, James, who was 13, everything he does is for them. And of his eldest son, he said, as a parent, all you want is for your children to be happy, and he is the happiest guy in the world. So we couldn't ask for more.
I'm going to talk with Chris Wasser in a minute about some of the highs and lows in terms of his movie career. But as someone who follows the industry, where do you think Colin Farrell now sits in terms of Irish actors? You know, we think the Oscars, we think Saoirse Ronan's had multiple nominations. You go back, you have people like Brenda Fricker. But the fact that he's finally having his moment, and he hasn't won yet, but he is having his moment.
I think in Ireland, and it is a terrible tragedy, you know, there is the tall poppy syndrome. The higher people go, the more we want to pull them down. It's a weird colonial hangover thing. I don't think anyone can dispute the fact that this Banshees of Inisherin is one of Colin Farrell's greatest portrayals. It just taps into his melancholy, like his little sad face walking along with Jenny the donkey, and his pain and his hurt when Gleason rejects him as a friend simply for being boring. I mean, the whole movie was just breathtaking, and he felt it. You felt it in every scene, his authenticity.
Now, if I've done something to you,
Just tell me what I've done to you. And if I've said something to you, maybe I said something when I was drunk and I've forgotten it, but I don't think I said something when I was drunk and I've forgotten it. But if I did, then tell me what it was. And I'll say sorry for that too, Colin. With all my heart, I'll say sorry. Just stop running away from me like some fool of a moody school child.
This is his moment, and I really, really, I don't want to jinx it and say that he won't win. I really want him to win, and I think he deserves to win, and I think all of Hollywood will be rooting for him.
Do you think, though, you mentioned that the idea that people want to cut him down, the fact that he has been at such low points, I mean, he's had some horrendous films, let's be honest about it. He's had some an awful lot of troubles in his life. So he has been as low as you can probably go when you're a multimillionaire Hollywood star. Do you think that, I get the feeling at least, that everyone's on his team?
I mean, he's been on a journey, to use that terrible X Factor phrase. You know, he was as low as he can go, and now he's as high as he can go. He's clean, he's sober. He's just been nominated for an Oscar. He's won a Golden Globe. He's been nominated for a BAFTA. He's doing the best work of his life. Of course, everyone loves a story, particularly in Hollywood, and his is compelling. And I do think this is his year. This is his chance. He could retire after this and live perfectly happy ever after.
Chris Wasser, as Melanie was making the point there, Colin Farrell's career has done a 180, but if you could do some sort of a graph on the ups and downs of the actual films he makes, it would be all over the place, wouldn't it?
It would be all over the place, Kevin, because he started out on television, obviously, in the BBC's Ballykiss Angels, and then sort of accidentally fell into the role of movie star. And that's a role that he played for an awful long time. And it's one that we were happy to watch him in, too, you know, because around the time, I think one of the first roles that people saw him in on the big screen was Tigerland, and then shortly after that, Phone Booth. And there was something about his performance in Joel Schumacher's Phone Booth that he would kind of carry on for the next 20 years, which is that even if Colin Farrell's making something that's a little bit trashy and a little bit cheap and just, you know, knows that it's silly, he's going to give a great performance in it.
I've had enough of this game.
I haven't.
You said you'd let us go.
I changed my mind.
Miserable fuck. You can't do this. You can't do this to me. Look, I took all your shit. I did everything you fucking asked.
And we've seen him give great performances in an awful lot of bad films. So shortly after Phone Booth, we had about 10 years, or not even 10 years, maybe just about 5, of Colin Farrell in comic book movies. You know, he had Daredevil. He had his own, you know, swords and sandals moment with Alexander, back when Hollywood was obsessed with, you know, trying to make a film as successful as Gladiator. He had, you know, the action ensemble piece with Swash. You know, he still made films at home, like, you know, the decent but probably overpraised Intermission. He was kind of doing everything, and there's a problem with doing everything. After a while, people get a little bit sick of you. Maybe the actor gets a little bit sick of working all the time. It eventually just came to a halt, and we had that. We had a moment with Colin Farrell where he stopped, you know, saying yes to everything and was a little bit pickier about his choices.
2004, Chris, will forever be remembered as the year of the tragedy that was Alexander.
Yeah, Alexander, yeah. The one where all of Hollywood's greats come together and for some reason try out Irish accents. I'm not sure what Oliver Stone was doing with that. You had everyone in this. You had Colin Farrell, you had Val Kilmer, Angelina Jolie playing, you know, Alexander's mother, despite the fact that there's only a couple of years between Angelina Jolie and Colin Farrell. Jonathan Rhys-Myers was in there, Anthony Hopkins. So many, you know, promising ingredients there, but, you know, the final dish was just horrible.
One of the highlights was shooting Alexander, and one of the lowlights was how it turned out.
Really?
It's not funny. Honestly, I would, if I knew how the film was going to be received commercially and critically, like slaughtered in both arenas, I would still do it.
And there are 4, maybe 5 different versions of this film out there. And, you know, I'm sure Colin Farrell has joked about this before. It doesn't matter which version you watch, they're all crap. You know, there was this obsession with the time of, you know, I remember we had Gladiator, that was decent, as I said. You had Troy, you had Alexander. Everyone was trying to make the next big Swords and Sandals epic. Why? I don't really know. And it didn't really work out for Colin. And I know I said there that he always brings, you know, vitality and energy and enthusiasm to most of his roles, but he does look a little bit embarrassed in this. And he still says to this day that, you know, he's not quite sure what they were doing. And unfortunately, there was a few more bad roles after that. You had Miami Vice, which didn't really do anything for anybody that saw it. You know, as Melanie was saying earlier, it made money, but wasn't a great film. You had Cassandra's Dream, which was a very forgettable Woody Allen film. Maybe the moment that started to turn things around, and certainly that actually finally put a trophy on a shelf, was In Bruges.
With Martin McDonagh, of course, who is behind The Banshees of Inisherin. Where do you think, like, I have seen Banshees, and I have to say, I came away scratching my head. The scenery is brilliant, the acting is brilliant. I did at the end kind of wonder what was the point and why did they have to cut off the fingers without giving them. I don't think that gives the plot away too much, but what's your own take, Chris? You're more qualified than me.
No, I loved it. For me, the fingers, I don't think we're giving anything away there. The cutting off of the fingers, yeah, it's a gory, heavy, but gory metaphor. And I love this film. I thought it works well as an essay on sort of, you know, sour brotherhood. I thought it worked. I thought the Civil War backdrop, you know, you can make what you will of that, but I thought it was cleverly done. This idea that, you know, there used to be this, you know, there used to be corners of Ireland where you had an awful lot of men wandering around and completely incapable of communicating their feelings. And this is a very extreme example, but it does it very well. And I also quite liked that it's a breakup story in a way, and that, you know, this idea, I mean, Barry Keoghan's character at one stage says to Colin Farrell's Podrick, you know, what's Brendan Gleeson? Is he 12? Why does he not want to talk to you anymore? This idea that you have to stay friends with someone for life. Why? You know, there's an awful lot going on in there. And I thought the story was great. The performances were fantastic. It looks amazing. It's certainly the best that Colin Farrell has ever been. And he's been leading up to this over the past couple of years. You know, he still every now and then takes on, you know, a blockbuster. Maybe it's to pay the bills. You know, we saw him in Dumbo. We saw him, you know, in the Wizarding World, in the Harry Potter universe. You know, he still does those big films every now and then. But and also he was in The Batman last year, but that worked out very well for him. But there have been several smaller roles over the last couple of years where you're thinking, okay, he's transforming himself here. He's done the movie star thing. You know, he's done the supporting player thing. This is Colin Farrell, the character. Director era. You know, we see him in smaller independent offerings, whether it's at Yorgos Lanthimos, that was The Lobster, that was The Killing of the Sacred Deer, whether it's doing stuff like last year's After Yang, which you haven't seen, is watch it. It's just a lovely, lovely sci-fi film. And also, you know, stuff like 13 Lies with Ron Howard, where he's part of an ensemble. It's not the Colin Farrell show. You know, there are more people involved. So the work is getting better. We will still see him in flimsy throwaway blockbusters, but it's nice that the roles are getting more interesting. He's become a more interesting actor, and he's also become a better actor. And that's why now he's been nominated for an Oscar.
And finally, Chris, then the same question I asked Mel, which is, where does he now sit in the pantheons of Irish? He's done the bad boy thing. You say this is his character phase. Like, does he sustain this now? Does he stay on this track? And where does he sit in the overall Irish landscape? Is he our greatest actor ever, or certainly threatening for that title?
He's certainly in the top five, maybe top 10. He is one of our greatest actors, I think. And I hope that, you know, he will continue to work with the best directors, and that he'll put, you know, the filmmakers first, the stories first. But yeah, I think he is. I put him up there with, you know, you mentioned, you were talking about Brendan Fricker earlier. I put him up there with Daniel Day. I put him up there with the greats. Like, he is onto something special. I mean, I could be talking to you now in 10 years and we could say that The Banshees was just the start of it, that, you know, his greatest roles came after. Hopefully that's the case, but he is something special.
Chris Wasser, thank you very much. My thanks to Melanie Finn and Chris Wasser for joining me today. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode was produced by Mary Carroll, research by Tabitha Monaghan, with recording by Gavin Hennessy and sound design by Graeme Davison. Archive clips from The Late Late Show on RTE, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, Associated Press, Lorraine on ITV, The Golden Globes, The Academy Awards, Independent.ie, The Banshees of Inisherin, directed by Martin McDonagh, The Lobster, directed by Yorgos Lamantos, Phone Booth, directed by Joel Schumacher, and Winter's Tale, directed by Avika Goldsman. If you want to hear more of our award-winning journalism, you can visit independent.ie or wherever you get your podcasts.